Welcome, welcome, welcome back to BTSE's podcast, Meeting You Where You Are. I am Chris Simon.
And I'm Jada McCray.
And this has been an extended period of time since we last recorded.
I know, you took a hiatus.
Oh, you're going to blame it on me?
Yeah.
Well, I was celebrating my 35th birthday.
Yes, you did.
They only come once.
They only come once.
So there's 36, so be prepared for next year. No, I'm just kidding. It's good, man. Where I'm from, they say you're not supposed to make it to 35.
Listen, you made it to 35 and you'll make it much longer.
I know.
You got a long life ahead
of you. They say
where
I'm from, you're supposed to be dead or in jail by now.
You know, it was interesting. What was I was watching an episode of Black-ish and it was Pops was turning 65, a character on there, and he was celebrating. And he told his family, he said, "You don't know any black men over 65, do you?" And they started thinking like, I don't know.
Like when I was 65. Hey, with these new medicines and everything and this health craze, man, hopefully, you know, it'll be a lot of people over 65.
I think so.
But I do feel blessed, you know. I feel blessed to be 35. Mm-hmm. But I feel blessed to be doing the work that we do, you know what I'm saying?
Every
I think
day.
We do very, very, very important work. I feel like we're trailblazing, we're revolutionizing, and we have so much in store that we're going to be doing in a related relationship to mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Which is my segue. Excuse me if I got some rust, if I just don't transition appropriately. You know, I've been off the air a little bit. I've been off the air. Yeah, you might need to slide some oil to me. But yeah, so it is May Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yes, it is.
That is a big month for us.
It is. It is. It's huge.
It is huge.
Huge.
Like the crowd sizes. But no, so Mental Health Awareness Month, and you did an awesome video.
Oh, thank
you. That was phenomenal.
Thank you.
I was like, look at her doing her best Chris Rock and
Chris
rendition. Nah, but you did an awesome job. And we have a lot more videos coming out. So if you're listening, if you don't know, please follow us on Instagram at BTSE Services. Follow us on Facebook. You get to see a lot of the footage and videos and stuff that we do, a lot of promo, educational stuff. But when you were talking about breaking the stigma.
Yes.
As it relates to mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Why? So obviously you agree that there is a stigma.
Absolutely, there's a stigma.
But why is that?
I think it comes a long way from back in the days. People used to really be ashamed, and still to this day, that's why we're working towards breaking the stigma. There's this shame.
Before you say why there is a stigma, sorry to cut you off. What is the stigma?
That people don't like to be labeled as crazy. And I take great exceptions to that word, but people don't like to be labeled as crazy or feel that they are somehow not in control of their lives or their minds, or that they're weak, that their faith is not strong enough.
I've heard words like retarded and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
People think that there's just this negative
Yes.
Is it connotation?
Yes.
You know you're the wordsmith. when people say mental health, it's like, oh, you're gonna be in a hospital.
An asylum.
Yeah, you got to be in a straitjacket and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm.
And all of those things were really true. And I think a lot of it was true in the past. And we did have asylums and we did have a lot of mental health hospitals. We still do have mental health hospitals, but there's been this great push for more community involvement and integration with mental health. But I think that people think of extremes, like everything else. People think of mental health and they think of extremes. And so I think we need to kind of focus on the mental health, not just taking care of those extremes, but making sure that we take care of people's general and daily mental health. It's like a person who may be chronically ill. You would go to the doctor for treatment or a specialist for that or take care of it. But for those of us who may not be chronically ill, but just need to take care of ourselves and need to check in, you go get your checkups, you see your primary care physician.
If you're anything like Jada McCray, you'll be waiting outside a patient first for them to open up.
I don't like to be sick. I don't.
Jada
like
called me like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, yo, what's up? What's going on? You good? Yeah, I'm just sitting outside of patient first waiting for it to open for baby Daisy, and I figured we could just go through our agenda for the day. I'm like, yo, just because you up don't mean I'm up. Listen, I ain't sick. I ain't got to be at the hospital.
Listen, I wanted to make sure strep swept through my house, and I wanted to make sure everybody had medication for that.
Jeez. But no, it is true. People put a lot of value and emphasis on, not a lot of people, because I know some of our brothers.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like to go to the hospital.
No.
We don't like to go get checkups. We don't like to do this stuff.
I have to force my husband
to do that. Yeah, yes. Because it's like, as a man, you're used to being in control. Not saying men are in control. Like,
I know what you're saying.
You know, I don't want any movements starting up with hashtags of me, you know. But I'm just saying, like, literally.
You too.
I just don't want anything. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean. But as guys, sometimes we feel like, as leaders of our households, leaders of our communities and all this other stuff, that we have to be in control. We have to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to the doctor, it's a vulnerable experience.
Yes.
It's like, you're like, if something's wrong with you, you cannot fix it yourself. It's not like you can dig your hand into your chest and stop a heart attack or whatever else it may be. You know what I'm saying? So it's sometimes a vulnerable experience. And I would imagine that's a physical thing. Mm-hmm. And people talk about these physical mm-hmm. things. There's research about these physical mm-hmm. things. So if that's a vulnerable experience, for somebody to have to say, hey, I'm going through something, but it's in my brain.
Yeah.
It's not like you can go in and do surgery on my brain and it's going to make me think differently. You know what I'm saying? It's going to make me not experience or feel differently about something that I've gone through. You know what I'm saying?
I would just encourage those men to make it be strong enough and brave enough to be vulnerable, because at the end of the day, that's what it boils down to. If you want to, if you're all of those things, if you're the leader of your household and a pillar of the community and all of those things, that means that people rely on you. And so if people are relying on you, that means that you have to be able to take care of yourself and make yourself vulnerable to take care of yourself.
Yeah. So we understand what the stigma is, and I got a project that I'm working. Should I mention it or not?
Go ahead, yeah.
So I'm working on.
No.
Don't give him the juice
don't
yet.
Don't give it.
All right, we ain't gonna give it to him yet.
That's a special project.
But we got some special projects that we're working on. Where we're talking about the stigma related to mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we? So we know that there is a stigma, right?
Mm-hmm.
People don't want to bring their children in. People yes. don't want to deal with some of the stuff that mm-hmm. they experiencing. They try to chalk it up or. Mm-hmm. Fine. I mean, you got to understand, there are some resilient people. If we look yes. at this from a strength-based perspective, because we all, in some sort, have dealt with some type of behavior health, mental mm-hmm. health situations, but we found a way to cope. Mm-hmm. Not saying it was the most effective coping skills, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? But we found, as a community and as just people in general, we found ways to cope with these mental health things. Mm-hmm. But how do we break the stigma and allow for real treatment, effective treatment?
It has to come with education. I think, like a lot of other things, education really does kind of break down those barriers. You know, I always quote about my people perish for lack of knowledge. I think that when you give people the knowledge that they need to make good decisions for their lives. We've often had parents who would come in and, you know, they bring that child in as a last resort because they were referred by the school or the doctor because the child continued to get in trouble in school. And so, you know, it was finally out of control where they felt like they couldn't control it enough, they couldn't manage it enough, that they were willing to get outside help. And when we would ask, what stopped you from coming in before, it was because I don't want my child to be labeled.
Yes.
I don't want my child to be stigmatized. I don't want my child to be labeled. I don't want it to be on his quote-unquote record that something is wrong with him, that they may pop up in the future. And so I think about all of those years and all of that time that the child suffered when they could have been getting help and not getting all of the other negative labels that come with being unable to manage yourself.
So let me play your devil's advocate, because mm-hmm. you said education helps break the stigma, right? But is the parent wrong that their child could be labeled? Because, you know, if you do get diagnosed with something or you have emotional or learning difference or something like mm-hmm. that, in most cases, in some public schools, you wind up getting like an IEP if you mm-hmm. need it to be able to function better in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Isn't that a form of labeling?
No, it's actually supposed to be a form of help. If an IEP is implemented the way that it should be, it's to give your child the tools that they need to be successful in school so that they can get the education they deserve and can move forward and not have all of the things that trip them up that they wouldn't have if they didn't have support.
So, but what about the parent that may feel like, you know, let's say I go to the doctors and they say, and I have strep.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say that I have, I don't know, whatever the rest of the stuff are, being that I don't go too often myself. I'm kidding. But let's just say I have strep, right?
Yeah.
I can take something to cure strep,
mm-hmm.
and I no longer have strep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that follows me.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of parents are scared that, like, hey, if I go get my child diagnosed, and let's say they have ADHD,
mm-hmm.
that's going to stay with me. And like when I go to other future examinations or stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
they ask me, and you would have to admit, yes, I've struggled with ADHD, you know?
So the first thing I'd like to say is that I think that mental disease is also physical disease as well and has an impact on the physical body. And some physical influence impact mental disease or can exacerbate the symptoms of mental disease. So the two really do go hand in hand. It's just the way that it expresses itself. It expresses itself as if it's wholly in your mind. But if we were able to educate people, they would understand that your gut is actually your second brain.
Here you go. know.
And so a lot, I know.
I have a smaller second brain than I used to.
Yes, your second brain has decreased tremendously. But a lot of that has come with your choices. So I think that if we really do understand, if your child is depressed, if your child is anxious, that takes a physical toll on the body. And it increases sickness. It increases those instances in which your child is unable to go to school. It leaves their immune system more vulnerable. So it will follow them because there is it'll be a notation in their mental health record. But it's just like anything else. The more we get the public to understand what it is, the less of a stigma, the more people understand what it is. For instance, ADHD just means that your child has difficulty focusing, concentrating, and managing his or her behaviors in some instances because they have a excess of impulse control. They have a difficult time managing impulses and focusing and concentrating. So,
but you're not. I feel like you're providing some very good knowledge, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. My direct question for parents out mm-hmm. here who are feeling this way or may want to know, if my child gets labeled with ADHD, mm-hmm. can we beat this or can we cure this just as if I'm labeled with strep, I can take medicine or whatever and beat that?
I would liken it more to diabetes. So even if you are able to manage diabetes through diet and exercise, you know, some people are, you know, 250 pounds and they may be diagnosed with diabetes. They may lose 100 pounds and they no longer have the symptoms of diabetes. They may no longer have medication or anything else. They, you know, because they take care of themselves. But the day that they stop with a proper diet and exercise, and if they're ever 350 pounds again, their diabetes will return. So it's there. So with mental illness, it is a chronic disease, but like anything else, it can go into remission with proper treatment.
Okay.
Yeah.
In order for me to be diagnosed with a certain mental health mm-hmm. disorder, I have to meet certain diagnostic criteria.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So if I've developed the coping skills, I've been able to manage these things, mm-hmm. and that diagnostic criteria, and I no longer meet that diagnostic criteria, is it safe to say that I do not have this anymore?
It will be in remission.
Remission.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's in remission.
Okay. So because some parents do, I obviously know these things.
Sure.
I'm just playing the devil's advocate uh-huh. because I know I get parents, and I'm a parent, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I've asked questions about my son, and I was mm-hmm. neglecting care, or just evaluations and mm-hmm. stuff like that because I didn't want my son or somebody else to be like, hey, this is wrong, this is, you know, or whatever.
Just because we're mental health providers does not mean that we're not people.
Yeah.
And so some of the, even though we have the education and all of these things in the practice, we're still people at the end of the day. So some of us, I always say we have a lot of therapists who may have come in, not just the BTST, but just in general, this field. These are people who have experienced family dysfunction. These are people who have experienced depression, anxiety, a lot of times, and they want to help. They want to learn more about it, and there's an interest in the field. There are a lot of us who are in the field who don't experience those things. But, you know, but we're human beings, too.
So that's where I want to go to next, is talking about how do we help people normalize mental health?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you said people think of straight jackets.
Yeah.
You know, hair blown out,
yep.
running through people, places crazy.
Yep.
I mean, running through places mm-hmm. uncontrollably.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that there aren't those severe cases uh-huh. of mental health disorders. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to perpetuate this idea,
yes.
but there are some more severe cases of mental health disorders.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if we talk about this, people can understand that, hey, stuff that I go through and I rationalize or just cope with would be things that would lead to mental health stuff or things that I need to further consider.
Absolutely.
Like if you think about trauma and PTSD, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Two, you know, things that go hand in hand,
mm-hmm.
right? Growing up in urban communities or just in a, I'm not going to say a capitalistic world, but if you think about just the U.S. government, how mm-hmm. we will use force when needed,
mm-hmm.
how people have to defend themselves and aggression and
yes.
stuff like that, you
uh-huh.
know? In the communities we grow up in, like the murder rates, Chicago, Baltimore,
yeah.
these things are, people are dying, people are being hurt, police
mm-hmm.
shootings, domestic violence,
mm-hmm.
bullying.
Just lack of.
Lack of. Mm-hmm. These things lead are traumatic experiences.
Yes.
Even a car accident.
Yes.
Is a car, somebody could be lost through a car accident or
mm-hmm.
whatever. Or somebody could have died suddenly due to diabetes or something like
mm-hmm.
that. And we normalize this. We don't properly go through the stages of grief, the process to heal the grief process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kubler-Ross. Ooh, you ain't think I knew about Kubler-Ross, did you?
Look at you.
I'm trying to tell y'all. Hey, Sarita, the next one, mental health moment, is coming from Chris Simon, all right? We're going to put me in front of the camera, and we're going to film me, and I'm going to talk my stuff. People think just because I don't speak as eloquent as Jada LaCrae,
oh my goodness,
that I don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway.
He's very knowledgeable.
But no, anyway, these things lead to mental health. Yes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we rationalize and looked at it this way, it's like, hey, somebody died that I know.
Yes.
There are people being killed. These are traumatic experiences. These lead to moments of like PTSD for me. Like, if you were in a relationship with somebody that was abusive and they wore a certain cologne, and then now when you smell that cologne at another time, it brings back a moment of fear or whatever. Like, these are things that happen on a daily basis, but we don't consider mental health or that you need to seek mental health treatment related to.
You know, it's so funny. I was talking to my sister the other day.
And you said what I just said.
Yes, exactly, to verbatim. But no, I was talking to her the other day about how both of us love Monica. You know Monica, Miss Thang, all of that. Don't take it personal.
Monica Brown?
Yes, Monica.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, so we loved her, right? But
was not a fan.
She can't
a picture.
There you go. He came, but she came out at a time like 95, like 94, 95.
Yeah.
And we used to listen to that CD all the time in our house on repeat.
Just one of those days?
Yes, the whole CD. We loved the whole thing.
That's Monica,
right? Yes, it is. Yeah. But we, but it was also around the same time as our parents' divorce. So we were wondering, like, because we were listening to Monica, and she came on, like, we were driving somewhere, and she came on Pandora, and we was like, oh, we love the song. And then the song went off, and we were like,
it felt a little melancholy.
We felt sad and melancholy.
And
so then we were
why.
Like, why are we both sad? So then we started talking about it, and I was like, you know, that was a trigger for us because of that time in our lives. Even though we love the song and we love Monica, the time in our lives was a sad time because
music
of our
has
parents'
some
divorce.
Nostalgic.
It really brought that up. It put us back in that space. It
has some nostalgic value.
Yeah.
Like, it puts you in a place. And
it
imagine
does.
If music can do that.
Yes.
What are these other things that can do that?
There are so many other things that can do it. And it's just, it's... trauma is just so interesting because it imprints itself on the body.
Talk about it.
Okay. So what it does is you have to kind of think about trauma as it burns itself into the primitive brain, the primitive part of your brain. The part of your brain.
Is that the subconscious Kanye was talking about?
Okay, yeah. So
we'll get to that part later.
We can get to Kanye.
He's going to be on the sofa today.
But trauma burns itself into the primitive part of your brain. And when I say that, think about the first time that your mother could have warned you a million times, don't touch that, it's hot. Don't touch the stove, it's hot. Don't touch the stove, it's hot. You don't get it until you actually touch the stove and burn yourself. Your brain will never forget how hot fire is because it's burnt. That pain, that searing pain that your brain experienced when you touch fire, you will never forget it. And every time you see hot, you'll think of that pain.
Yeah.
Even if you don't remember that when I was two, I touched the stove and burned myself, the primitive part of your brain will always remember that, and it imprints itself on your body. So sometimes when people experience trauma or they experience symptoms of when they had trauma and there's a trigger, they'll start to feel that trauma all over again. Mm. So when we deal with people that have trauma, it's not just a memory or a flashback. It is a total, it can be a total body experience.
Yeah.
I can feel it. I can smell, you know, you can get a flashback of something on TV and then you smell the cologne of your attacker.
Mm-hmm.
You feel it on your body. You know, and if anybody has trauma or has experienced trauma, you can kind of cut off the radio or cut off your podcast right now because I don't want to trigger anyone. But, you can, all of these things come back to you and you remember it is a full body sensory. That's what I'm saying when I say mental health is not just in the mind. It is a full body feeling that you can experience.
And it's not just trauma, like depression.
Yes.
Like people break up in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Things don't work out
mm-hmm.
the way you plan. You know what I mean? And you get let down.
Yeah.
And some people don't know how to process that let down or cope with it. Or just think that, oh, we just find negative, we just find, you know, Band-Aid, I like to call it Band-Aid ways to try to cope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but really, some of that may be depression. Like, if you were in a significant relationship with somebody that you cared about, that you loved, and something happened to it, whether you and the spouse broke up, whether somebody was taken from you due to death, whether, you know, you and a best friend had a falling out in some capacity. You know, that can lead to somebody being depressed.
It can.
And a lot of times we don't want to label the word depressed with it because depressed seems like this deep sunken place, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it necessarily is not that all the time, you know?
Just like you can have walking pneumonia, you can have functional depression.
Yeah.
Where you're walking around in a constant state of being morose.
What? Just
morose sadness.
Is that the girl that used to work for Trump? No, that's Omarosa.
That's Omarosa.
Oh, what's the word you use?
Morose.
What exactly is morose?
It's an overwhelming feeling of sadness, and it's an overwhelming, like a gloomy feeling, a sadness and a gloom.
I'm going to go home and be like,
morose.
Chris, what's wrong with you? I'm morose right now.
You know, there are plenty of people who have dysthymia, which is just like this low-grade depression their whole lives.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are plenty of people who are walking around with functional mental illness. And things like you spoke about before, relationship ending, you know, all of these things can really trigger depression. And so that's why you really want to stay connected with family and friends or people who just happen to know you, because they'll know whether or not you're going through a period of being blue and if it's unlike you and you've transitioned over to depression. If I'm blue for a couple of weeks, if I'm blue for a couple of weeks because I had a breakup, but if we're a year later, and I'm still having difficulty getting out of bed, I'm still unable to enjoy things that I enjoyed before, I'm still not able to. It's impacting my work.
My personal relationships.
You gain weight, you've lost weight. You know, you maybe if you're a person of faith, you're not able to really engage in your house of worship like you used to before. These are things that people might want to look out for. What I just say, mental health is not just that person's issue. It is a community issue. We have to keep each other up, and we have to check in with each other.
But I also don't want people to be like me when it comes to health stuff. If I feel a pain in my foot, I'm on Google and everything like, oh my God, Jada, I think I have yada, yada, yada.
No.
Or my wife, Janine, will tell you, if I get a pimple on my arm, oh my God, you know what? I think you know what I mean? Like, I'm nuts with it. So I don't want people, a hypochondria?
Don't be a hypochondria.
As it relates to mental health, something's wrong, I'm sad, oh my God, I'm deeply depressed, yada, yada, I need.
No.
I'm not saying that you shouldn't speak to somebody to clarify that, but feelings are normal is what I'm trying to get to. And everything might not be a mental health disorder.
Yes.
However, in some cases, there may be, and we don't want to just normalize it. Yeah. We really should seek help.
Yes.
And another thing that goes with depression hand in hand is anxiety.
Yes.
I am killing it today. I'm letting people know.
Go ahead.
But it's anxiety.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And from that depression, so if we think about like a relationships that weren't there, you know, or even just think about in our urban communities, sometimes like when it's a lot of fatherless homes.
Yes.
Or fathers will come into the kid's life and don't be stable or something like that. Or kids are promised something by a parent or a teacher and it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. That creates anxiousness. People don't think that, anxiety is just this weird, crazy thing. Mm-hmm. But it's like literally anxiety could be, you know, you not having the ability to properly plan for something because you're used to being let down. So now you're approaching situations with a little bit more hesitation.
Yeah,
and fear.
It's one of those things. Again, anxiety, a lot of times is from people. They did a study in the 1990s called the ACE study. It's the,
You can't put acronyms out there. You can't break down the words.
I know it. Childhood experiences. Adverse childhood experiences study. And they did 17,000 adults. And they studied 17,000 adults. And they were able to determine, through those adults, people who were more likely diagnosed with anxiety, depression, and other physical disorders as well, experienced at least four or more of these adverse experiences in their childhood. So physical abuse, sexual abuse, being in a house with domestic violence, being in a house with a substance abusing parent. So all of those things, and then it's 10 total, it's 10 questions, and you get a point for every question. But what they found was that if people were experiencing those things in their home, being a child of divorce, I think was one of them, so experiencing those things in their home led to an increase of having anxiety and having depression. So most people wouldn't know to put their finger on that. You know, for instance, my parents had divorced. I mean, my parents were divorced. I developed anxiety as a late teen. And so I would have never put those two things together that my parents divorced. I wasn't a mental health professional at the time. So I would have never thought my parents' divorce led to me having anxiety.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, it would have never occurred to me. So a lot of times you have to think back into your past to figure out exactly what it is. I encourage anybody to look up the Adverse Childhood Experience Scale and look at yourself on that scale. And it may just kind of explain some of the feelings and emotions that you're having.
Yeah. As simple as, like, watching a fight at school.
Yeah.
Like when you were in high school, people would, you know, like when I used to live on the Alameda, right? Mm-hmm. And then my family moved to Sedonia at one point, and I went to Hearn Run.
Oh,
right?
Wow. And
hurry up and run, right?
Yeah.
Northeast people were like tormented by like Hearn Run.
Uh-huh.
So they would take the long way around or go back street so you wouldn't have to come past Hearn Run. But think about that, right?
Yeah.
They found different coping skills.
Yes.
Because they were anxious.
Yes.
Because if you saw somebody that walked that way and got beat up, you weren't trying to walk that way again.
You don't want that to be you.
Exactly. So that is anxiousness right there. That creates anxiety.
I went to Trigger Pen and I got banked by some people from Winston on my way home.
Oh, really?
You don't forget that.
It might have been some of my homies. Winston rode deep.
I'm laughing about it now. It was not funny at the time, you know?
No, yo, I went to Lake Clifton, bro, and when we left, we used to have to walk up St. Lo Drive.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you could cut through the golf course, right? And I seen this one fight, man. Everybody from Harford Road to Voley, everybody, I mean, just came over and start beating this dude.
That's a ball.
I mean, they were in the trees, jumping out, pulling down tree branches, hitting people with it.
Wow.
And, you know, needless to say, I walked the other way. Now, I didn't really have to walk the other way.
I don't blame you.
I knew people from up there, and we were good. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, literally, you think that wasn't ingrained in my mind at some point this could be you if you ever deviated from what, you know what I mean?
Yes, I totally.
If you ever got into it with somebody from there, so, you know, you made nice with the people from around that way, because it could go 0 to 1,000 real quick.
And it makes sense. And we do learn how to cope, and we do. But the thing is, I want people to be encouraged and know, like you said before, it will always be with you. The fact that I have, that I was diagnosed with anxiety disorder, that will always be with me. But it's not anything that I'm ashamed of. And it's something that I know how to manage. And so, like, I know the things that I need to do to manage it. And I know that if my life gets a certain way, then those things, those symptoms come back. And I do. I get restless. My mind will go a million miles per minute.
You?
Yes, I know.
Your mind?
Yes.
What?
Well, my mind goes a million miles per minute anyway, but imagine my mind on, like, you know, on speed.
Yeah.
It goes, like, really, really, really quickly, and I'm thinking of a million things, and, you know, I'm here, there, everywhere, and it's difficult for me to sleep. And so I know these symptoms about myself, and I have no, but the thing is, I've embraced it. This is part of who I am.
Yeah.
And so in order to take care of myself, I have to do certain things to make sure I'm taking care of myself. So there's no stigma. If you see me in the street and you want to ask about anxiety disorder, feel free. Like, there's no stigma with me with that.
I know I'm kind of similar with, like, ADHD. I know in some point in my life, I've been.
I just sit through meetings with you all the time.
You're an idiot. You're kind of, you know, you can't diagnose friends and family. But I'm saying it's hard for you to stay on task as well.
It is.
I've had to help. I've helped you stay on task.
Because
we'll be in meetings. We'll go from this to this to this to this to this. And we're like, hey, you know what? We're going to stay on this. We're going to finish this topic. And then we go on to the next one.
But see, a coping strategy. You know, when I'm in a meeting, if I'm taking notes, I will doodle while I'm taking notes.
Yeah.
Because that helps to shift my focus and my concentration. Yeah. But that's something that I actually learned, a coping strategy that I learned to get my mind centered, was to doodle. If I doodle while I'm writing, it's all kinds of crap, stars and flowers. And I'll, like, if I see your computer screen across from me, I will doodle the symbol to your computer screen. But I do all of that because it helps me to focus on what you're saying.
So I want people to understand this. Two people talking to you right now that run a behavioral health, mental health organization are admitting that it's normal because they actually deal with it. So if they can deal with it and say that this is what bothers them or what they're impacted by, everybody should be able to step out there.
Should.
But when people want to, when they want to come to BTST, right, how can BTST help them? What should they know that make them feel safe, secure, and find, what should they know about our services that would be like, wow, you know what? I feel like, you know, I want to reach out to them.
First of all, it's confidential. I think that's what people should know the most, is that what you say to your therapist, if you don't have an intention on killing someone else or harming yourself, like, really have a plan. I'm going to go home today. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that to harm yourself. What you say to us is confidential. And we keep it in confidence, and we don't share it. And if we see you on the street, please know I've had clients who have come to me, and they may see me in Target, and I'll see them too, and I'll keep going unless they acknowledge me first. If they acknowledge me first, because I never want people to be with a relative or be with a friend. They're like, well, how do you know her?
Yeah.
So I never acknowledge them, and our therapists are the same way. So we keep things confidential. Also know that these are people that you're talking to. So even though we are trained, we are trained. We're professionally trained. We're trained in trauma. We're trained in interventions. You see, Chris knows all his theories. And we're trained to know what we're dealing with. But at the same time, these are people who've also had experiences who can really empathize with you in your situation. So if you remember that there are people who are in this business because they genuinely care for other people who really do want to help, who've had experiences as well. We're not perfect. We have issues with our family members and loved ones and friends and ourselves too. So we understand where you're coming from, but we put the professional aspect on it.
But what about from a service perspective? Do you come to us and do you?
Yeah, we do.
Is it like going to the hospital, inpatient hospital? hospital?
You know what? I can't even. I always assume that people know that what we do. We do individual and family therapy, and we go in homes, in schools, in communities. We do it in your house, in your home and stuff to make sure that you can get to us.
And they can also come to us.
And they can also come to us as well. So we want to make sure that people
facilities.
Know. Our facilities are beautiful. And for medication management and other on-site activities, you can come on-site. It's really pretty here. It is. And we did that so that people have a space of calm and peace and a comforting environment where they knew that we cared enough to make it nice for them. Because so, we go to a lot of places and they're not like that. So I'm not even trying to
brag. So to simplify this, if somebody wanted to come to
was
us.
Was I rambling?
No, no, no.
Okay.
But you say you go, we do family, individual, we come on site, off site. Uh-huh. But to make it very simple, if I'm feeling something, you would provide somebody for me to talk with that Absolutely. Would be able to help me talk through my problems or whatever it may feel.
The first person you talk to would be our intake coordinator, and she would kind of get us an idea of what your symptoms are. You would call in and say, you know, I've been feeling depressed, or my child, you know, we may think that he has ADHD, he's been having behavioral problems in school, whatever it is. It would be assigned to an intake therapist who would come out, ask you some questions, get your consent for treatment to make sure it's okay to continue on. And after that's done, if we're able to help you, if it's something that's within our realm or spectrum that we help with, we would make sure that you got assigned to a primary therapist. If you've had medication before, or it's a thought that maybe medication, you would benefit from medication, we have medication management here with our psychiatrists and our nurse practitioners. We have a fleet of vans. So if you don't have transportation, we'll come to you and provide transportation to you. We have literally, and you know this, Chris, we did everything that we could to make sure that we removed all barriers for people to have treatment. We want everybody to be healthy and whole, and not just for people who traditionally have access, like rich people or even middle class or upper middle class people, but for everyone to be able to get treatment.
I want to make it even more simple.
What you want to do?
So if I sign up, do I have to stay? If I decide, you know what,
no.
I feel like this is not for me, that I'm not signing a commitment to be there.
No.
Okay.
You don't. You can opt out of treatment at any time. We would, if it's always best to do it in a way that is guided clinically, because we don't want people to stay in treatment forever if they don't have to. If you're well and we've taught you, you know, coping skills and we've helped you to identify your natural supports, you can graduate. You can graduate out of treatment. But if you need to come back, we're always here.
So if I feel like I'm in treatment, but I feel like my kids would benefit from it as well, from our family structure and dynamic, could they sign up as well and we get family treatment?
Yeah.
So we could have somebody talk to us about a multitude of things.
Mental illness does not happen in a vacuum. It's very rare that we'll find that, you know, one person is here for treatment and it hasn't impacted in some way the rest of the family.
So if I feel like I want to be around other people who feel the same way as me and we get educated.
Yeah.
Is that called a group?
We have groups here as well.
Okay.
We have psychiatric rehabilitation, which is also, it's a supportive program that we have for people who are in therapy, to just the extra step to learn social skills and also to participate in different groups. We have yoga groups here. We have music groups here.
Nice.
We even have a couponing group here.
Nice. So if I don't really have the money to pay like a fancy therapist like in LA, would my insurance cover it?
So yeah, absolutely. And what you need to understand is we take medical assistance and we also take private insurance as well. Just for people
and
to
private
know.
And private pay, yeah.
And private pay, I'm sorry. You can come with the coins. But but all of the therapists in the state of Maryland are licensed the same way. So if you go to a therapist and you pay them a gajillion dollars, or if you come to us and we take your insurance, everyone is licensed the same way. We all have the same requirements. We all have the same CEUs that we have to take. All of it, if a person is licensed to be a therapist in Maryland, we all have the same credentials.
So let me ask you this. I'm going to conclude with this before we go on the couch, right? Why should I come to BTSC and see a therapist there when I got my homeboys? I talk to them all the time, and they can tell me what's up.
Because just like we're people, your homeboys are people, but we're people too. But we're people who have been trained to specifically handle your situation.
So you mean the same way I'm not going to let my homeboy fly this airplane and take me where I need to go? Is the same way.
He might be a good navigator. You know, I just, like, my husband's really good with his hands and he can.
But he's good with direction.
He's good. Yeah, he can build a gate for the backyard. I said, if you want to really, I don't want him to build a house unless he takes some carpentry classes.
Gotcha.
You know, something might be innate in you. And I was one of those people where I would always be a good ear and I would be able to give good advice. However, I was not a trained psychotherapist at the time. So something may be innate in me. And it is, you know, I do have a natural ability to be able to communicate and connect with people. However, I needed training as a psychotherapist before I went around doing harm to people.
Awesome. So, Jay, I'm excited because I feel like there's a breakthrough coming in mental health. Mm-hmm. And I feel like mental health is about to become a part of culture. You know what I'm saying? You see, shout out to Sarita and our blogs and all the great work that we're doing.
Yep.
Sarita raised her hand like it was like the camera could actually see her on the microphone. But no, like literally our blogs, we getting Mariah Carey opened up about mental health. Lionel Richie, basketball players.
The Rock.
The Rock. Jay-Z's talking about his relationship and how he goes to therapy and found. And then we get Kanye. So kind of a slippery slope with this
Kanye.
But hey, you know what? No judgmental zone with us. You can come. We're going to put you on the sofa and we're going to talk this thing through. So Kanye West, right? So Kanye has been going on these rants recently, and some people think it's because he has his record coming out that he's trying to get some promo for. It's a publicity stunt. Some people thinking that he's just bat bloop crazy. You know what I'm saying? And then other people are thinking that they're disowning him. They whatever. Me, so I want to preface my statement with Kanye, right? I don't agree with. I think that Kanye is genius, you know what I mean? I think that he's a forward thinker. I think that Kanye has, from me being somebody that has a lot of thoughts in my mind, and sometimes when I try to articulate and they come out a little rambled or not in full completed sentences, like I may start a sentence and then transition to something else and leave you without completing it to give you a full understanding of what I was saying.
And he was talking about me.
I could see him, I see him doing the same thing, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not agreeing with all of his actions or stuff like that. However, I think that he does make valuable points. I'm not going to get on to him agreeing with Trump and all this other stuff like that because I have a perspective on it, and we'll save that for another conversation. But if you think about some of the stuff that he was talking about, that impacted him. Like, he was on his TMZ interview. So he was talking about how he went to a hospital, you know, and he had this breakdown on stage, how a lot of people were relying on him. And he couldn't live up to the expectation of what they wanted. You know, people need him for financial stuff. People need him to help make their careers. People need him to be in the studio. That pressure can drive someone, and I don't want to say crazy, because we keep putting this, like, word crazy, and you don't want to, if that's crazy, I don't want to be labeled crazy.
Crazy is a way, as a catch-all, in a way to be dismissive towards a person and what they're feeling.
But it drove him into a place that he couldn't handle, where he became overwhelmed. And a lot of people deal with that type of stuff.
I totally understand that. I mean, I get it. They pressure bust pipes. You know what I mean? And so he was saying that, you know, the issue with Kim being robbed and the fashion line not being received as well as he would have liked it to have been received, and things were not right since Taylor Swift. He got on the stage and interrupted Taylor Swift.
And he was disowned by a lot of people.
Yeah.
So a lot of your close personal relationships that you thought you had, or business relationships and moves that you were trying to make and goals that you had, were now severed because of that action. And you feel like, who do I turn to now? People are disowning me because I'm not PC.
And he also had a really close relationship with his mother. And he said that after she passed away, he didn't have anyone.
Exactly.
He felt like he didn't have anyone.
Yes.
Because sometimes when we're in a state of depression or whatever it is, we are not able to receive what people are offering us. And so it's just like,
or we're not able to trust people.
We're not able to trust. And so he may have experienced things that made him feel like that the people surrounding him did not have his own best interest at heart. And when he had the person who guaranteed he knew for sure had his best interest at heart, things became really difficult.
Yeah,
for him.
Because I mean, and I can understand that. I mean, he's come from a place where, I mean, if you look at some vintage Kanye and he talks about it, he wasn't socially accepted, you know what I mean? So to go from being unsocially accepted, not reassured and confident of who you were, I believe he always had his confidence, you know what I'm saying? He knew what he would create. But you didn't have people, but now all of a sudden, you didn't have a whole bunch of friends and people just riding out with you because they believed in you. And now all of a sudden, you got people that's riding with you. They're saying they believe in you. They're saying you're great. You're meeting new friends that's building and getting and gaining from what you're doing. Like, a lot of that stuff can be like, oh, I don't know who to trust because they weren't there before. So, and the person that was left. So I can understand that uncertainty with that. And then the depression that he probably felt when his mom did pass.
You know,
because she was trying to conform to social standards. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure he paid for that surgery for her and stuff like that, you know, to try to conform to social standards. So he, I'm knowing his mind, he probably felt that he played a part in her death, just as he said he played a part in Kim's robbery because he hired the security.
You know, people often will find those associations, and I think that people, a lot of times human beings will do that in order to be able to feel more in control of life, as crazy as that sounds. So, for instance, like Jay-Z, he often talks about when his nephew passed away, that his nephew died in the car that he bought. But a lot of times people always think of, if I'd done this differently, if I'd done that differently, you know, that I
they could interrupt God's plan.
Yeah, and I think that people do that because as human beings, we always like to find cause and effect, and we always like to find our hand in it. It's the same way that children, when parents get divorced, children try to find out, you know, they blame themselves because if I'd done something differently, maybe if I didn't ask for so much, maybe if I didn't complain so much, maybe if I wasn't bad in school or whatever, then my parents wouldn't have gotten divorced. And that just demonstrates that we like to have control over our environment. So Kanye feeling like he's somehow to blame for his mother passing away would mean that he's just, in a way, trying to grasp for some control over his environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at him right now, again, I don't know him. I've not read his chart. I've not interviewed Kanye. And it's hard to diagnose people. You know, you can't diagnose people that you have not met or don't know. But when you see him, what I'll say is a lot of the behaviors that he's demonstrating now are very... what I would say is I've seen a lot of these behaviors in people whom I've treated who are in a manic state.
Yeah.
And so mania, for people who don't know, is part of bipolar disorder. There's the depression, and then there's also the mania. So people with bipolar disorder go through cycles of deep depression, and they're oftentimes interrupted or followed by periods of mania. Mania sometimes does not happen as often as depression does. And so, and also mania doesn't always feel bad for the person.
But you also have
mania.
To also figure that he's an artist. So he operates in a hypomanic state. Yesterday, sometimes. I do know about hypomania as well. So he does operate in a hypomania state because of creativity and all of that other stuff.
A lot of people who have mania are artistic. And for them, they feel like it releases the control. They're able to stay up for long periods of time. Their brain is going faster. They're in, like, the zone, and there's this release of a period of control. And this is not to say that all artists are manic, but a lot of people who
create
have been known to, I mean, you know, a lot of people who are manic have been known to be creative as well. And all of this creativity flows forward. It's also sometimes heightened sexual interest as well. Mm-hmm. You know, people... going mania, and they go on shopping sprees and spend $20,000-$30,000 at a time. It feels good to them at the time. But then there are also people who go into a manic state and they get irritated, anxious, and very aggressive as well.
Yeah.
And so, but just him firing all of his staff, that's another thing, just kind of like I just hope that the people surrounding him are able to get a gauge, because that's what's important about having natural supports around you, because people will know when you're off.
He said that Kim probably would never wind up in the hospital because she has a family around her that can rear her and that can kind of let her know when, like, can be a support for her.
Yeah.
That's the hope, that it doesn't get out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
But then he also said, like, he even went and had liposuction.
Yes.
Because he wants to conform to not being judged by the public.
Yes.
So all of that type of scrutiny can lead to these things. But what I want to end with is
people,
like,
scrutinize me, and all I do is all we do is release videos on Instagram and Facebook.
A lot of people judge him, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you see people, he's crazy, he's this and the third. And we do that as a community of individuals.
Yeah.
We are so quick to judge somebody and say this and the third, but never think to offer a helping hand,
if we
or
could
to
all
help
just
point somebody
extend ourselves
into
in love. And I think that if we could
now
all...
Now you sound like Kanye.
Oh my gosh, don't tell me. No. But if we could all extend ourselves in love and see people as human beings, I think that a lot of times we judge what we don't understand. We judge what we are fearful of. And so
you're fearful of what you don't understand.
You're fearful of what you don't understand. And so you'll sit in judgment of it, like, oh, because what people are afraid of is, how would that impact me? And what if that were me? I want to get that as far away from me as possible, or feel like this person is on a whole nother end of a spectrum. And what I do know from all of these years in mental health is that all of us are, you're just a degree of separation away. If you don't experience it yourself, you know someone who is.
And I think that as people, we should value other people's perspective versus throwing a negative stigma on something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, if he was talking about, like, Tom Cruise has a different religious practice and they're calling him crazy now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just because his religious practice isn't what you've been brought up, reared, and taught or agree with, or is not in alignment with your principles, doesn't mean this has to be crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or doesn't mean that that something's wrong with somebody. Mm-hmm. Allow people to be who they are. It's almost like homosexuality.
Yeah.
People were saying, oh, these people, gay people are crazy. They suffer from mental health disorder.
It used to be
disorder.
In the DSM-5. Yeah. The DSM. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, just allow people to be who they are. If it's different from you, doesn't mean that they're crazy. It doesn't mean that they're bad. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think as a culture, if we start looking at people that way and respecting other people's thoughts and ideas, it will go a long way. But then also, once we stop judging, we can lend a hand, support, or direct people in the right direction to be supportive, and not just, hey, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what, bro? I think you're going through. I understand what happened to your mom. Mm-hmm. I think we should talk. Mm-hmm. And I think not just me, but with a professional or something like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I think if we had more people like that leading us and being empathetic with us, that we could make some impact as a culture.
Definitely so.
So, Jada, I don't feel like we did too bad picking up from where we left off.
No, I think we're going to be back. We're back in the saddle.
We're back in the bag,
we're in
our
groove again.
Okay. All right, well, speaking of our groove, as normal, go to www.btscservices.com. Yes. If you're interested in our services, if you would like to sign up for services, meet with somebody just to talk, there's a referral link. You can put your information. It's confidential. If you're looking for employment, licensed therapists, PRP counselors, we're always looking for some of the greatest and highly motivated healthcare professionals. Marketers, admin assistants, we have it all. We're always looking.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you check us out. Check out our other podcasts and stay tuned to a lot of stuff we have going on. Thank you.
Yes.